Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
So here we are in an unspecified location, not in hiding, deliberately.
Not in hiding yet.
Not in, what's it called, what they do with this witness protection program, but just...
I don't think witness protection looks like this, though.
Oh, I don't know. It depends on the witness they're protecting.
We are in a very, very nice hotel room because, what are you doing this
week? I'm drawing to the end. By the time you listen to this, by the time you hear this... When it lands on Friday, I will have finished finally filming series 4 of Amazing Hotels. And we're recording the podcast here, and Ben has visited, and it's the most glamorous place I've ever done a podcast from, except that my microphone is an upturned bin with a microphone sitting on the top of it.
But it's quite fitting, maybe, for what we're going to talk about.
Well, we're going to talk about all sorts of things, but...
What's happened to you since last
to me,
week?
Yeah. Me? Nothing really. Oh, you mean that?
Yeah.
Well, I wrote a column... Last Saturday.
Which listeners will remember us talking about, which was about how and why there aren't very many young male novelists at the moment, where there are dozens of young female novelists.
Although it's not a massive crisis, it's a bit of a nonsense. It was a female American novelist whose name you
Elizabeth
will remember.
Strout.
Elizabeth Strout.
Strout.
And she said that there are no young male novelists coming through. And this, I then went and looked up the statistics and found that it was indeed 57% of new fiction last year was written by women and 43% only was written by men. And we decided together, man and woman, that this would be a funny opportunity to write a column about... I wrote about the shortage, the crisis. We're running out of turkeys, we're running out of pigs in blankets, there aren't enough waiters, and also now, oh my God, we're running out of young male novelists. Where are they all? It was just a joke.
And you have a unique perspective on this because...
I wrote a novel once, which didn't do very well.
And
it was good in parts, it was okay, but there was a lot wrong with it. It won the Bad Sex Award in 2005, the Literary Review Award for Bad Sex in Fiction. But it won that because I... thought that was funny. That was 2005. Irony existed then. And they found this passage in my book. It's a fantasy. It's not a real sex scene. It's a joke sex scene with a ridiculous description.
It's a joke sex scene written in order to bolster up your character of Winkler as a bit of a monster.
As a preposterous version of a narrator. A preposterous version of myself. Who knows? Wrote it. I got a call from the Literary Review.
Who runs the Bad Sex Awards.
Which runs the Bad Sex Awards. And the nominees were Salman Rushdie, Norman Mailer, still alive then, John Updike, I think Melvin Bragg and me. And they said, do you know, if you show up, obviously, they love to give it to someone who shows up. If you show up, you'll win. Do you want to show up? I go, yeah, that'll be fun. A bit of a mistake. You know, I showed up, I won the next morning in 2005. It was all over the press. It was all over. I remember it was in the Rawalpindi Echo, a friend of mine, a Pakistani friend of mine, who lives there and had me go, I saw you won the Bad. That's a... terrible, that's a shit piece of writing, Giles. I go, yeah, it was a joke, Mikael, it was a joke.
Yeah.
Look, it's gone in the paper and that's not really how it's supposed to be.
The Bad Sex in Fiction Award usually does make the papers, but yours seems to have landed.
Mine landed. And I slightly regretted accepting it, but 16 years on, you know, it's water in the under a bit. You know, it's on Wikipedia, it's sort of there, the Bad Sex Award, it's no massive deal. But in the wake of writing this piece where I was joking about there being a shortage of young male novelists and saying, I said, yeah, I mean, I wrote a novel, and I didn't even pick it up. I said, I wrote a novel with some okay words in it, some of them in the right order. It won the Bad Sex Award. You see what I mean? Ridicule and mockery, lads. That's all there is.
There is another element to this that we ought to mention now, which is that you actually made a documentary called My Failed Novel, and it was you talking about your novel and the process of writing it and the
genuine hurt and pain, yeah. The sadness. I always wanted to be a novelist. I thought I was a good enough writer. I thought I was that guy.
And you went around to lots of different people, book groups, writing groups. You went to talk to Geoffrey Archer. You talked to
Hanif Qureshi.
You talked to all sorts of people. And you went to talk to your agent, Johnny Geller.
I talked to a writing class at UEA.
And you were really, really, really honest about
Rose Tremaine.
The problems with it and why it hadn't done very well, and you read some bits out and you were sort of embarrassed,
and I sat there, yeah. And for the sake of a good drama took the shit. I had, yeah. Archer laughing at me, mocking, yeah. me, Geoffrey Archer calling me a useless, talentless twat. I had, yeah. Hanif Qureshi sort of scoffing at me. I had rooms to make an interesting drama. Anyway, so I did all of that, trying to live,
but the point was that you have totally held your hands up to any possible accusation of anything,
yeah. And what happened after I wrote my perfectly jolly column where I was just joking about there being no male novelists anymore, just joking, saying, where are they? Are they all backed up in shipping containers outside university towns in their corduroy, you know, trousers and tweed jackets, unable to burst onto the London restaurant scene because of haulage issues? It was a fucking joke.
Yeah.
And I got a Twitter pylon of massive proportions about nothing. I've done bad things that I regret on Twitter. It has happened and I've been piled on, and you have to go, is that the police coming for me? No, it's not. We're just in a central London hotel. But yep. And so I think we need to describe what happened now, because I think we've done a big setup, and you're quite right that we should have done.
So there was a Twitter user, and what did they do?
A Twitter user, I think that's where it came from. Mm. I wouldn't normally look. I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I heard about it and I looked. Twitter user took the headline, which said, why are there no young male novelists? Didn't read the piece about, it was only a joke. Then took the sentence where I said, and I wrote a novel with some decent words, some of them in the right order, even won the Bad Sex Award. Oh, but that then put the link to my embarrassing passage of sex, deliberately embarrassing, deliberately silly, that won the Bad Sex Award, and wrote something like a play in three acts.
Yeah.
A passage which, of course, listeners to Giles Cronin has no idea and now going to go and read and hate me, but there we go. And she got 100,000 plus, I haven't looked, like 100,000 likes, and it reopened everything about me. So it went back everything I've done on Twitter for 20 years, and people don't care that it was in the past. So they dragged up the Bad
this
Sex
week,
Award.
It's literally like every wrong thing that you've done happened last week.
I've just been hiding under a bed. I don't know, yeah. how I've been fighting. Luckily, I've been in a really swank hotel. It's been a four-poster gold bed that I was hiding under with hot and cold running flunkies and room service. But they dragged up the bad. They dragged up an email that I wrote to set, which basically started my career as a, quote, controversial columnist. I mean, 2007, still grieving for my father, fucked up in 1,000 different ways, had just met you, you know.
Yeah, always hope the pain had only just started, yeah.
Slightly pissed. Midnight. I read my column goes online and the guy's made a mistake and I go, type, 1,000 words. Shall I send this, darling? No! Send!
You didn't ask me.
Did I not?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Look what I just sent, darling.
Yeah.
And you went, is it too late to recall it?
Yeah.
And I went,
yes.
You had a deep, higher voice then. Went on the front page of The Guardian, the only time they've ever managed to have my prose in there because they can't afford to pay my actual rate. Is this the angriest? Sorry, I'm making myself more popular. Is this the angriest, yeah. man in Britain, said The Guardian. It led to me getting the book deal, which later led to the thing happening with the bit, but still. But that was then, and it was a bit, that was embarrassing too. I had to go to a party and have Martin Amis say, oh, well, I'm Giles Cronin. Giles, lovely. I really enjoyed your, there was time enough for me to go, is he going to say novel? Is he going to say recent column? And then he said, email. You know, everyone saw that email, but it was 14 years ago, and for about 5 years it's all anyone talked to me about. It's there on my Wikipedia. Now that email has done 100,000 people have expressed their horror again. How can he write? Look, he hasn't even got the respect to capitalize the letter I. So it's like literally yesterday I wrote a bad novel, accepted the Bad Sex Award with a shit scene in it, and then wrote an evil letter to the subs, and then, I mean, literally everything. And you wonder, well, what's the point of sitting down now and looking at the news and trying to find something new and fun to say about it, which I don't even really mean, which is just a joke, because some fuckwad on Twitter is going to take it in bad faith and try and end me?
Unfortunately, at the moment, this situation is exactly what it's like writing for a newspaper.
Because this has happened to you.
oh yeah, this has happened to me. But the difference was, it happened to me and I looked at it and went, I'm not doing this anymore. And I came off Twitter and I completely, totally, one up. When people go...
Tell me the one you're thinking of, the piece that you wrote.
Do you know what? The details are now a little bit hazy, but it was a piece I was asked to write for a new, very cool editor. And I wrote a letter to my daughter about how I hope she loves makeup as much as I do.
Because you're writing for a magazine about makeup.
Exactly.
And you wrote a joke about makeup and you said that I hope she's a physicist, but if she's going to be a physicist, I hope she's a physicist who wears makeup.
I was making the argument for very, very expensive skincare in a skincare magazine. And so I was saying, you know, my daughter doesn't care about what she looks like, and I think that's an amazing thing. But I also wanted to say, you know, the thing about skincare and makeup is it's nice to look nice. I think I said it's polite to look nice. And that's a thing that I have to take on myself, because I quite often look like I fell out of a bin because I can't be bothered. And
you made the kind of joke which I often make.
Tea time.
The butler arriving. Can we just pause that for a second, Ben? It's your tea.
Giles acts like there's sort of precious actual tape going round in the machine. Yeah. Like, but pause it to save the precious tape rather than this is just digital. Hello.
Thank you very much.
Nice to see you.
I'm really enjoying that. The podcast is still rolling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. I love the fact that in terms of first world problems, thank you so much. In terms of first world problems, I'm here complaining about how terrible my life is while a butler in morning dress brings a silver tea service to the table.
Yeah, sure.
All I want to say is you made a sexist joke. You made a joke. You said you're imagining your daughter being a physicist or working in that, but you hope she makes the effort to look nice. And you got taken out and made to look like you'd meant it.
And my editor really liked the piece, by the way.
I know you
said... Nobody said to me, I'm a bit worried about this. And I didn't go, no, I've got to write it.
But I filed it.
And she went, it's great, we love it.
That's what happens with... That's what my column last week, devised on this podcast, in the thousands of times listeners hearing us have the perfectly jolly idea. Same thing. But you had that thing. And you have subsequently, and quite to a degree, subdued your career. When people say, what does your wife do? She's a journalist. She doesn't take it as seriously as I do because she doesn't want the expert. You have subdued your career and written smaller things in lesser places than me because you can't face the awful, awful shit that goes with it.
Absolutely, absolutely terrifying.
And you're a nice person and write nice things, and I'm...
No, Giles, you're a nice person and you understand that you are paid to have an opinion in a media where most people are like me and they are too scared to say anything.
So this week, basically, hundreds of thousands of people, there they are, and you try and tell yourself, as you always tell me, Twitter doesn't exist, Twitter isn't real, it's not, but hundreds of thousands of people are just laughing at me. And some of that element I can take. Okay, so I wrote this novel and it had this sex scene which was meant to be a joke, and I allowed it to win the Bad Sex Award because I thought it would be fun and I thought I wanted the attention.
Yeah.
And I made and I let that happen, and now people are laughing at me again, and I guess I have to be the butt of that joke. And I made a film called My Failed
which
Novel. And
loved,
some people on Twitter, there's a massive 10,000 people on Twitter liked a comment which said his novel was so bad they made a film about it. No, I made a film about it because I thought it was interesting. And of course, there's another massive strain on Twitter this week, which is he's a fucking Philistine, he hates Jane Austen. Because I made a film a few years after that called I Hate Jane Austen, which was a film about how I love Jane Austen, but I framed it as a narrative where I come back and they've also...
But that shows you, but the thing
English is... teachers saying this is... He's like the worst child in my class. He's like the stupidest child in my class. English teachers, I have the names of their schools, who think that my making a film about how I love Jane Austen and getting Jane Austen into the public domain by creating a narrative where I pretend to hate her, dress up in Regency dress and come round to liking Jane Austen, like the plot of every fucking Jane Austen book, like Mr. Darcy coming round to Lizzie Bennet, I come round to... They can't fucking see it, and they put it on the internet and suggest that I'm a Philistine, and they can fucking...
Well, the thing is, okay, I can see that you're very upset. Mm. And I was about to say you're looking a bit upset, but then you started talking to me about my pylon and I could hear myself getting really upset. And it's really, really upsetting because it's not fair and quite often it's completely wrong. The passage taken out of your book, you do have... this is not a new thing for me to say, but Twitter doesn't understand context, and that's why it's so dangerous and I hate it so much and I think it should be banned.
But there's no forgiveness and there's no moving
on.
There's no kind of doing your time.
And also the other thing is that Twitter, everyone a lot of people have left Twitter because they don't like the atmosphere. And the people who are left are the people who like the atmosphere. So you have a self-selected group of people who enjoy these drags and these pylons. It's like the Colosseum, and it's absolutely terrible.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can I just do some stirring noises so Ben can use them in future?
Sure. Sounds like you're doing a wee.
Stir that tea. That's actual bone china.
I didn't want to hit it too hard.
Yes, it's only worth 700 quid a cup. We can use that in future podcasts as punctuation.
So if you are, I've got a couple of ideas for you. The giant toothpick, Viscount Davenport.
You're really going safe there, aren't you? The giant toothpick. Giles can't possibly get our house.
This is what I'm talking about. This is the self-censoring that writing columns in
okay, the, you found me something suitably bland. Go on.
I have. The giant toothpick said, this is Viscount Davenport's slightly odd battle to build a 55-metre-high steel landmark to the Queen.
It's a fantastic hill to die on.
It is a very weird hill to die on, okay? And it's going to cost 3 million quid. It's going to be three times taller than the Angel of the North, which is massive.
Sorry, that's not enough money for something that big. 3 million quid sounds cheap. So when you say giant toothpick, is that toothpick in the sense of the shard? Is it a nickname, or does he say something about the Queen's teeth?
No, he hasn't called it a giant toothpick. It's probably called something else, but obviously it's going to be called the giant toothpick if he ever gets
it. You've got a picture?
I have got a picture. It does look exactly like a giant
toothpick. I mean, can I see the picture?
Yes, I'm finding it, my darling. There we go. Viscount wins battle to build giant toothpick for the Queen. Do you want to have a look at it? It's supposed to kind of mimic the...
Does it look like a toothpick?
Something or other.
He's tried really hard to do a tall structure that doesn't look like a knob, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to have a giant penis, which, like, for example, the Bezos rocket, a giant penis, and say it's a tribute to the Queen. So he's made it, it's sort of at a 80, 70 degree angle, sort of bronze looking. What's the story? I mean,
so your column would be, you can catch up on some other disputed monuments, sort of funny monuments. You can talk about the fourth plinth if you like. Everyone, a lot of people made fun of Anthony Gormley's stuff. I quite like Anthony Gormley's statues, but there was a time where they were really controversial.
No, the ones with the people and they standing on buildings. They're all right.
Didn't he do Angel of the North? Wasn't that?
There's
a list of other things that other monuments that people have made fun of. The Mary Wollstonecraft sculpture by Maggie,
which
Hambling.
Was just a massive by who?
Maggie Hambling.
Yeah, it was a massive sort of rock with a tiny naked woman at the top.
Yeah, it was a little weird that one. And then
Stoke Newington, they put that.
A bronze statue of the Queen by the Thames in Surrey was unveiled in 2015 to mark the 800th anniversary of the Magna Carta. Its position at Runnymede was called utterly bizarre and ridiculous. And then this one I quite like. Plans for a sculpture near Whitby Abbey were withdrawn this year. The work was to have been shaped like a dolos, a concrete block used in sea defences, but it was described as a lump of concrete. So you could get...
Whitby, I thought you're thinking Dracula, surely.
Yeah, exactly. So you could do a kind of rundown of some other kind of odd monuments and sculptures. And then I thought you could say... What?
Sorry. Oh, real ones?
Yeah, real ones. Fine, yeah. And then I thought you could have it get a sneak peek at a list of other monuments to people and things that have been rejected from the Committee for Monument Approval and Rejection Society. Okay,
is that a real thing or not?
No, it's not a real thing. So I the two off the top of my head were a monument was planned to the Five a Day Government Initiative featuring large vegetables placed at intervals along London Bridge designed by Jamie Oliver, and then a new monument to the Great Fire of London designed to be permanently on fire pudding. I don't know. Those are just off the top of my head. You'll think of funnier ones, but I just thought like
I'll think of ruder ones, and then
yeah, exactly. And it's but it, I mean, some of them are. I mean, this, I can quite imagine what this sculpture near Whitby Abbey that was shaped like a concrete block used in sea defence. You know that you know the shape of thing that I mean. They drop those giant concrete blocks at places in the sea where there's like you get big winter waves to protect whatever village it is behind
right,
it.
Yeah.
And they've just basically made a plan for one of these giant hideous things to be like an actual.
It's how shit sculptures are generally. It's that suspicion. So they do the block because things like Michelangelo doing his David. That's like they make out like now we don't need to do that anymore. We can just put a massive block and tell you what it means because they can't be asked and they can't do it. They don't have the skill and you can't do it. So why not just put a massive block and call it the vagina and say this is a tribute to all women. And that's basically what they do. That's why they can have a toothpick and they basically make a thing that they can make. And then say this is a tribute to the Queen. But he probably started off trying to make a sculpture of the Queen's face. It was too hard, so he did a toothpick. And then went, it's
the Queen.
I
think also quite often, yeah, my mother's a trained sculptor. And in sculpture, you know, sculpture is considered to be quite the kind of masculine end of artwork. And it's a lot to do with, you know, a lot of sculpture now is quite a lot to do with kind of engineering trickery and your handiness with a blowtorch rather than actual artistic skill, and that there's like slightly I get the feeling there's that kind of culture in sculpture, and this thing is obviously an amazing feat of engineering, a kind of 55 meters anyway, it's sort of extraordinary, and I'm quite surprised that this guy Viscount Devonport has fought quite so hard.
He didn't make it, he just wants on his land.
No he didn't make it. Who is it designed
maybe
by? Let's have a look. Anyway, that's that idea.
Okay.
Have you got one that you want to talk about, or do you want me to hit you in another one?
I've got a bits and pieces.
Anything you want to talk about? Not just some random thing you've seen in the paper, darling. So an actual thing that we can have a discussion about. Like, not just some funny thing about how cats are really, like, or something.
What are cats like?
I don't know. I slightly withered under your stare.
I know. This is I'm using my face in what is an audio medium in order to express. No, I mean, what do you mean? You're saying I fuck up this podcast regularly by just saying things?
No, but it's quite often you don't come up with column ideas. You come up with stupid ideas, things that you've seen in the paper and just chuck them at me. And they're obviously not an idea for a column.
As opposed to the giant toothpick.
Sorry, that's a really good idea.
I've written Daily Mail Tuesday, but I mean, have we
got
Tuesday's
that.
Daily Mail?
No.
But we talked about when we saw the story that they're going to take difficult words out of exams.
Yes.
So this is in this drive now. Obviously, the Times readers know what I think about exam degradation and all that, whatever it's called, grade inflation, and that's all boring. But they're going to take out difficult words that might be alienating for children who don't come from backgrounds where long words are regularly used.
It's a thing that Catherine Birbalsing talks about. Yeah,
she's the chairman of the Funny Name Foundation.
No, she isn't. Catherine Birbalsing was she is a head teacher of a net of a
school. Oh, she's the tough one.
She's the tough one. Yeah. And she said she's been. You think you're being dragged this week? F me, she's being dragged all over, up and down, everywhere for saying that some children are born bad and they need to have. Yeah.
Did she mean me?
Yeah, I think. Do you know what? Something tells me that you and she would get on actually really, really well. She's lots of people celebrate her and think she's brilliant. Other people think that she means children and everything. And she is of the position that you patronise children who are, you know, disadvantaged in any way by saying to them, you don't have to try as hard because you're disadvantaged. She totally agrees with that. She thinks it's really bad. And she said a couple of years ago, probably 3 years ago, she said, I take my students to tea in a fancy hotel and I play them classical music and I take them to the theatre so that when they go into the world they've heard Beethoven.
That's why we brought Ben here, so that he could have tea in a posh hotel, so that one day when he can go himself he'll know how to behave. Catherine Birbalsing would be behind me all the way, I'm sure. Which is, it's like they're going to take out difficult words from exams in case kids struggle because they feel alienated. They're also going to take out experiences that underprivileged kids might not have had.
Right, exactly.
This is a recommendation. Mm. So take out experiences like travel and things that... And I can see that. But the idea that they might say, you know, in a paper about 1066, imagine you're on a private jet flying to Normandy for a foie gras holiday.
Yeah.
What would a
With your soy latte.
Yeah, that would obviously alienate a kid from a council estate, but I don't think they phrase them like that. But they want to take out difficult words from exams. And I thought just an exam paper, if I was feeling stressed this week by all the business with my
I don't know something.
I don't know something that happened online that wasn't my fault, also it slightly was. Then I would write an exam paper with all the difficult words taken out.
But replaced with what?
Well, you take an exam. So the classic
balloon.
Example. What?
Balloon.
Sorry, what is it? Well, no, but it's like
what balloon? One like balloon minus another balloon.
It's what it would be easier to do with a history exam. So you would say because instead of calling it Magna Carta, you would say Big Map, and it would say when Big Map was signed.
Right.
At. Was signed, and you wouldn't say, you'd have to say, you couldn't say Runnymede because it's a difficult word, was signed in the olden days rather than 1215.
Yeah.
King John was, what was he?
Bad guy in it.
Naughty or good in his attempt to stop the other men having power. I don't know what.
There is actually a good point to be made. I mean, possibly not in school education, but certainly in undergraduate and postgraduate work, that academics write like drains, and I think they write like that, and they write sentences that genuinely do not make sense, that do not have verbs in them, because there is, I don't know, there's just this like kind of cult way of writing with academics, and they still do it now. I mean, they do it now. Lots of stuff that you want to read on any sort of modern issue, anything written by an academic is impenetrable. I think they do it on purpose. So. Sorry, that's not very helpful.
Look, maybe if that one isn't going to fly, another word one is, did you see that the OED word of the year?
Is what? Pylon. Cancel. Is it Giles Corrin?
It's Corrin. Is it? No, they always Corrin have their word of the year. No, it's Vax.
Oh, yes, I did see that, yeah.
Now, the OED didn't have a word of the year last year, I read in this story, because there were too many, and it was lockdown, and it was blah, blah, blah. Collins's word of the year was something else. So anyway, the OED word of the year is Vax. I was really interested to see, on a separate philological note, that was actually coined in 1799, vaccine only two years later. Obviously relating to Edward Jenner, the word comes, the etymology is Edward Jenner. The cowpox that he used.
Vacare, which is the Latin for cow.
Yeah, which is vacus, surely.
Vacare
would
say?
Be a verb, to cow something.
Sorry, vacus, you're quite right. Sorry, I didn't want to say vacare.
And because it was cowpox was what they used for the inoculation against the smallpox. Anyway, that's where it came. But it's really odd that vax came before vaccinate. So they go, I've designed this vax, men. And you go, what? Oh, it's short for vaccination.
V-A-X?
V-A-X was...
I don't believe you.
I'm not here to argue about the thing that was actually in the Times. Literally, bit weird, 1799, vax, 1801, 1800, vaccinate.
I very much think that needs to be investigated.
Okay, we can't do this live on air, because I'll be proven to be right and people will think I'm a bully.
No, the word before vaccinate was inoculate. V-A-X...
Yeah, it was the word before.
I don't believe you.
Okay, fine. Wait.
But look, by all means, go into it later. Okay. But can I just say for the record, I do not believe that the word VAX was used.
Yeah, it was
for before, anything. Yeah.
But if we're keeping score about how often I'm right, am I not surely leading?
You were so wrong about something the other day, and
you've
got to
say what the thing is.
I should have written it down. I can't remember what it was.
And the eight other occasions, which you can't cite. Anyway, I thought we could do other words.
Do you know what? Sometimes I go in hard on with this thing with the vax thing, because do you know what? Because I want you to understand, it doesn't fucking matter if you're right or not. It really, really adds nothing to the sum.
But do you think?
And I want you to see how I don't care if I'm right or not, because it doesn't matter.
Well, I'm not going to fight you on this one, because you were so sweet and supportive of how shit Twitter and the world have been to me this week.
So horrible to you.
For once. They were so horrible. Like I said, they were so horrible that you were on my side.
So horrible.
Which is so rare, because normally it's just like, I'm really sorry I've done this thing.
No, normally
thing,
I get
Twitter,
really...
You
I
go fuck off out of the house.
Yeah,
and,
I do. Yeah,
and this time you didn't. So I'm not going to fight you on this thing that I'm right about, because it would look bad. And I do care about whether
I'm right. It's not interesting if I agree with you.
It's not, so let's leave that behind.
I think you're wrong about that.
And talk about... What about... What? You've been listening to Giles Corran Has No Idea with me, Giles Corran.
And me, Esther Walker.
It's a Wireless Studios production for The Times, produced by Ben Mitchell. You can listen to us on the Times Radio app or download from wherever you get your podcasts. To find out what I wrote about in the end, you can pick up a copy of The Times or get a digital subscription. Just search thetimes.co.uk/Giles Corran has no idea. I've been promised that this will take you to an amazing offer, rather than just a website created by Ben randomly containing all my broadcasting mistakes. Although I'm sure that exists somewhere, it's just going to be up to you to find it. And for the full live experience, tune into my show on Times Radio every Friday from 1 till 4.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.